Hi, everyone, and welcome to this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald here on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. My name is Andrew Halp. I'm your reader filling in for this Thursday afternoon. Hope you're having a great day out there. Taking a check of the forecast. Well, you can expect sunny skies today as we started off the day overcast and cool. As I'm reading this to you at the 10 o'clock hour, right at about 52 degrees, but we should be reaching a high of 70 for this Thursday. Winds from the east, gusting as high as 20 miles per hour. For tonight, expect clear skies with a low around 42, winds from the east up to around 10 miles per hour. Friday, sunny with a high near 74, east wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 47, winds from the east around 5 miles per hour. And for your Sunday, expect mostly sunny with a high near 81. Did I say Saturday? A high of 78 on Saturday. But looking like a pretty nice weekend. Not many chances of precipitation here in the near forecast through the middle of next week. So enjoy it. It'd be a good time to go outside over this Memorial Day weekend and either honor the fallen and the veterans and loved ones. And also just to be outside and enjoy some nice time, some nice weekend, as Iowa is giving us just a wonderful three-day weekend to enjoy and spend with family. But again, for today, your Thursday, expect sunny skies, a high up 70 degrees for Dubuque in the northeast Iowa area. Taking a look at the headlines for today. Piasta adjusts department ordinance. Council allows two projects already in progress to proceed, but it requires any new proposals to be routed through the Zoning Board of Adjustment. That's a story by John Cruz. The dateline is Piasta, Iowa. Also, Data Walk tracks diversity, equity, and inclusion in the city. The Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque report shows progress, but more to be done. That's a story by Joshua Irvine. Developers launch $24.5 million warehouse construction project. That's our headline story. And the photo shows Brian Burke, Vice President of Operations at Simmons Pet Food. He was talking Wednesday at the groundbreaking for a warehouse along Seiple Road in Dubuque. I hope I'm saying that right. S-E-I-P-P-E-L, Seiple Road in Dubuque. It was an exciting day for the company and its planned expansion. So those stories and more in this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. We will start off now with Piasta Adjust Department Ordinance. Council allows two projects already in progress to proceed. This is written by John Cruz, Dateline Piasta, Iowa, where the Piasta City Council members this week lifted a moratorium on the construction of multiple apartment projects, but also passed an ordinance restricting future multifamily housing developments. The ordinance passed on a 3-1 vote with one abstention from Councilmember Justin Lau, removes multifamily residential developments, including apartments, townhouses, condominiums, and group dwellings, as permitted use on properties zoned for both residential and commercial uses. Councilmember Alexis Lundgren cast the lone dissenting vote. The ordinance also prohibits the creation of bed and breakfast and funeral homes on C1 zone properties and bed and breakfast and nursing homes on C2 zone land. City officials said the ordinance was passed as a means of limiting multifamily residential development in town in response to resident concerns that the city is growing at an alarming rate and potentially straining schools, roads, and utilities. The vision is to manage the growth of the town, said Piasta Mayor Russ Fobb. Piasta City Administrator Annette Ernst said developers still will be able to apply to create multifamily residential developments, but the request now must be considered on an individual basis by the city's Zoning Board of Adjustment through public hearings. The Board of Adjustment will listen to the community and the developers and make an informed decision, Ernst said. About 30 people attended the meeting, and about 10 spoke on the ordinance. Some offered their support for its passage due to concerns about the increases in traffic, while others expressed their opposition to what they saw as a move that would hurt future economic development. We believe that the current moratorium and proposed zoning limitations send the message that we are closed and not open for business, said Megan Pierce, representative for Piasta Economic Development Corporation. Without a variety of housing options and support, various income levels in our community, our workforce will be negatively affected. The now-lifted moratorium, which was enacted in March, prevented developers Callahan Construction and Cross Vic Development from continuing work on their projects to construct a 5-building apartment complex near U.S. Highway 20 and a multifamily residential development on Thunder Valley Drive, respectively. The ordinance passed this week will allow those projects to proceed. Callahan Construction, which had 2 building permits approved before the moratorium was enacted, is anticipated to have 3 outstanding building permit applications approved this week, Ernst said. However, the developers also own additional land in the city that was planned for development but now must receive additional approval from the city's Zoning Board of Adjustment. Developer Joel Callahan of Callahan Construction said the city's new ordinance severely hampers his ability to develop housing in the community and that he now doubts the city will allow him to move forward with projects he had planned for 3 other parcels in the city. "I have to start all over," Callahan said. "I think our plan is to put a plan on the city's plate, and when they say no, then I'll be done." Slavik Nekocheny of CrossFit Development said he is uncertain of the future of his planned housing developments in Piasta following the passage of the new ordinance. "I don't know what we are going to do," Nekocheny said. "We are probably going to have to hire a lawyer and go after the city for some compensation." City officials have said they are responding to residents' concerns that multifamily residential development will stress local infrastructure, though FOB said the city has not performed any assessments of the city's current roads and utilities capacities to verify those claims. However, Piasta Elementary School, which has expanded twice since opening in 2005, is reaching its maximum enrollment threshold. Western Dubuque Community School District Superintendent Dan Butler said the school currently can hold about 420 students. About 410 students are anticipated to be enrolled at the school next year. All right, so that's happening. Let's move on here back to Dubuque and talking about developers launching that $24.5 million warehouse construction project. The 250,000-square-foot building ultimately will serve Simmons Pet Foods Dubuque expansion. And that photo does show Brian Burke, Vice President of Operations, there as they are opening things up yesterday. It's written by John Cruz. Standing off on a vast brown swath of dirt off of Sipal Road in Dubuque on Wednesday, Gronin Chief Operating Officer Sean Hilborn encouraged others to survey the land that one day will be the home to a 250,000-square-foot warehouse. "Pretty much as far as you can see is going to be building," he said to a crowd of about 30 people. Hilborn kicked off the groundbreaking ceremony to mark the start of construction of the $24.5 million project by Sipal Warehouse, LLC, an entity made up of Gronin and other local companies to construct a warehouse and eventually will be leased to Simmons Pet Food. The project marks another major local expansion by Simmons. The pet food manufacturer started production in Dubuque in the summer of 2021 in a 275,000-square-foot manufacturing facility originally built by Flex Steel Industries and introduced a second pet food line the following summer. Once the warehouse is completed at the end of the year, Simmons intends to add 10 new jobs to staff the facility. Speaking on behalf of the company Wednesday, Brian Burke, Vice President, of further processing for Simmons, said the construction of the new warehouse in Dubuque is part of a $500 million expansion plan across the company. "We're excited to be here every day," Burke said. "I mean, what an exciting day for us." The warehouse project first was announced in February when Dubuque city staff presented a proposed development agreement with Sipal Warehouse LLC for the warehouse's construction. Initial plans called for the construction of a 190,000-square-foot building for $22.5 million. In April, the planned size of the structure was expanded to 250,000 square feet, and the overall project cost increased by $2 million. As part of the development agreement approved by Dubuque City Council members, Sipal Warehouse LLC purchased 15.5 acres from the city for about $1.5 million for the warehouse, with about $744,500 reimbursed back to Sipal Warehouse through an acquisition grant provided by the city. The development agreement also provides Sipal Warehouse with about 10 years of tax increment financing rebates for the project, which initially was estimated at $4.3 million. Speaking during the groundbreaking, Dubuque City Councilmember Susan Farber said the project marks a positive step for the area's economic development. "This is really an example of our economic growth in our industrial complexes and a great example of public-private partnerships," she said. "It's really just kind of fun to see the progress and just the initial steps of the process. The development agreement requires Simmons to create the equivalent of 10 full-time jobs by December 1st, 2024, on top of the equivalent of 271 such jobs the company agreed to create in a development agreement with the city approved in 2020. If the required number of jobs are not added, Sipal Warehouse will not be required to pay back a prorated amount of the acquisition grant. Gronin Real Estate Developer Director Nancy Kahn said the project only became a reality thanks to the collaboration and teamwork among Simmons, Sipal Warehouse, and the City of Dubuque. "A real estate development process cannot be done in a silo," she said. "The process involves months and months of coordination and communication." Hilborn thanked officials with Simmons Pet Food for their continued investment in the community. "I can tell you that Simmons has worked tirelessly alongside our team to make this project happen in Dubuque," he said. "There were some easier options they could have taken, but Simmons persisted and made sure that this project happened." And our final front page story, Data Walk tracks diversity, equity, and inclusion in city. Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque report shows progress, but more to be done. This story by Joshua Irvine. The Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque officials on Wednesday highlighted data from a months-long equity profile across that officials said shows progress in recent years, but leaves room for continued improvement. Dozens of people attended the Foundation's annual data walk, which showcased data pulled from the U.S. Census Bureau and local surveys to examine Dubuque's progress on issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. The event marked the completion of the Community Foundation's Community Equity Profile, an 8-month project featuring figures and survey data compiled from panel discussions co-hosted by the Community Foundation and TH Media and subsequent community conversations. "One of the questions is the progress of the rate we want it to be," said Alex Baum of the Community Foundation. "I don't think anyone here would say it's sufficient. The first profile, which was created in 2015 with an aim to understand the diverse experience of our residents," said Community Foundation President and CEO Nancy Van Milligan. "Since then, the local population has grown both in number and diversity," and new equity profile summary notes. And that's what it does note. As the Community Foundation compiled its 2023 equity profile, officials held 7 panel discussions that drew more than 500 attendees and 40 community conversations that drew 400 attendees. Additionally, 300 surveys were completed by community members. The completed report highlights information gathered across several areas, noting data such as the low percentage of black households who own their home compared to their white peers, the increasing diversity of Dubuque's workforce, the prevalence of brain health concerns, and Dubuque's low rate of violent crimes committed by strangers compared to similarly sized cities in the state, among other findings. Baum said the data shows progress, some significant, but it is nowhere near enough. "How do we continue that so 5 years later, when we do the next equity profile, we can be more celebratory," he said. Well, during Wednesday's data walk, participants had the chance to engage simultaneously with the profile's findings and one another. "The more we can collaborate on data like this, the better," Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said. Participants noted issues across a range of topics. Jenny Peterson Brandt, who helped facilitate February's arts and culture panel discussion, was taken by the increase in chronic absenteeism in Dubuque's community schools, which climbed from 12.4% the 2018-2019 school year to 27.4% the 2021-2022 school year. On the poster paper taped up on the walls for participants to contribute their thoughts and ideas, Pastor Stan Sampson of Dubuque Paradise Church said he wrote about a need for more ethnic cultural programs. Some of the data points prompted intrigue or confusion. Kavanaugh and Yara Lopez, Associate Director of the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, both were skeptical of census data showing a doubling in Latino households' income from 2013 to 2020, reaching $60,250 in the latter year. Lopez said it was unlikely Dubuque's Latino population had more wealth than white households. Census data not included in the data walk showed Latinos had lower per capita incomes than their white peers. Per Community Foundation Director of Communications Jeff Dana said part of the idea of the walk was to invite community leaders to engage further with the issues laid out by the data. But Loras College Diversity Officer Sergio Perez pointed out what he saw as a fault with the event's goal. "I see the same people I always see," Perez said. "There's a lot of folks that don't belong to these organizations that should be here." At one table, La Metra Murdoch and Adriana Johnson, who work for the City of Dubuque and Northeast Iowa Community College, respectively, discussed their own experiences with racism in schools. Per one of the Community Foundation surveys, two-thirds of respondents agreed or strongly agreed they had concerns about discrimination in Dubuque schools. Murdoch related how her daughter has been called racial slurs by her peers at school. "It's not a safe space for all students," she said. Murdoch signed up on a sheet posted by the Community Foundations inviting participants to engage further with issues around education. "That's a conversation I want to continue because we're actually living in it," she said. All right, that takes care of everything on the front page of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for this Thursday, May the 25th. Did I mention it was May the 25th? Can you believe we're that far late into May? This year is flying at just incredible speed. And here we are, almost to June, almost to Memorial Day, this coming Monday. Taking a look at the news in brief, DNR says smoke from Canadian wildfires polluting eastern Iowa air. Wildfires in Canada have been impacting air quality in Dubuque and surrounding areas, which could hurt sensitive residents. That's according to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The Iowa DNR Ambient Air Monitoring Officer Todd Russell said Wednesday that smoke particles from the fires have been affecting air quality in Iowa for some time and could continue as the fires burn. But he said the worst of the current haze should begin to dissipate the morning of Friday, May 26th. "Today, Wednesday, the levels are high," he said. "The air is unhealthy for sensitive groups, including the elderly, as well as young children, people with asthma, or anyone sensitive to any other air pollution. People in these groups are encouraged to limit outdoor activity during these smoke events. Residents can track air quality affected by fires at the Environmental Protection Agency's fire.airnow.gov. The meteorologists expect the smoke to clear the state by Friday morning," Russell said. "That does not preclude the possibility of more arriving." In other brief news, authorities say a man used boat he didn't own as cash advance collateral. This out of Manchester, Iowa, where authorities said a Delaware County man lied to a bank about owning a boat he used as collateral for a $50,000 cash advance. Jeremy D. Klima, age 37, of Delhi, was arrested last week on charges of two counts of first-degree theft. Court documents state that Klima, the owner of Delhi Boats, requested a $50,000 cash advance from Community Savings Bank in Manchester on March 8th. Documents state that Klima used deception to obtain the cash advance, claiming he owned a boat that the bank then used as collateral to issue the cash advance. It was then discovered that the listed defendant lied and the boat was actually owned by someone else and it was just being stored at Delhi Boats for the winter months, documents state. Klima then used the cash advance to pay off the other defaulting loans at Community Savings Bank. Klima also previously was arrested April 25th on another first-degree theft charge. Documents related to that charge state that Klima made a purchase agreement on January 21st with a man for a boat worth $60,000. The man agreed to trade in his current boat for $16,000 at a later date, bringing the net sale of the new boat to $44,000. The man provided $35,000 toward the new boat between January and March and also purchased a $4,000 trailer. Court documents state, Klima indicated to the man that the new boat had been traded into his business. However, on April 16th, the man learned the boat was still owned by its previous owner, documents state. The man requested a $35,000 refund from Klima, but the money was not returned, documents state. And then also here, four-vehicle crash closes highway for 2 hours in southwest Wisconsin, Dateline Fenimore, Wisconsin, where authorities said a four-vehicle crash involving a dump truck injured four people and closed a highway for 2 hours in southwest Wisconsin. Caitlin O'Connell, age 33, of Dodgeville, was transported to Upland Hills Medical Center in Dodgeville for treatment of her injuries, according to the Grant County Sheriff's Office. A press release states that Dan Carey, age 65, of Highland, Bruce Hashider, age 67, of Sauk City, and Heather Volden, age 44, of Viroqua, all suffered minor injuries in the crash but were not transported to hospitals. The release states that Carey was driving a dump truck west on US 18 near Fenimore at about 12:45 in the afternoon Tuesday when he slowed to make a left turn onto Anniton Road. Traveling behind Carey, O'Connell's vehicle slowed for the man to, for the truck to turn. Hashider was traveling behind both vehicles in a semi-tractor trailer and rear-ended O'Connell's vehicle, pushing it into the rear driver's side of the dump truck. Hashider's semi then swerved, striking the dump truck and pushing it into the eastbound lane of US 18. Volden was traveling on US 18, and her vehicle struck the rear driver's side tires of the dump truck. Hashider was cited for inattentive driving. The release states that other aspects of the crash are being investigated. And in our police blotter, the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported that KCR Brokus, age 35, of 2935 Van Buren Street, was arrested at 4:32 p.m. Tuesday at the Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging third-degree burglary. Thomas G. Rapier, age 35, of the 600 block of Chestnut Street, was arrested at just before 2 o'clock Tuesday at his residence on charges of domestic assault with injury and obstruction of emergency communication. And finally, a forgery case involving just over $9,000 worth of negotiable instruments was reported just before 10:30 Tuesday at Hearst Logistics at 2491 Kerper Boulevard. Our next story here on page 2A, Platteville officials hope to spur housing and industry with TIF District. New district will likely be located near the city's industrial park. It's by Grace Nyland, Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin, where the Platteville city officials hope to create a new tax increment financing district on the east side of town to incentivize industry and housing growth. Common Council members this week approved about $18,000 to start the process of creating the district with assistance from Delta 3 Engineering. The city has not yet identified exact parcels for the new district, but it will likely be located near the city's industrial park on the east side of the city. Some of the parcels we're looking at are zoned for commercial and others are zoned for residential, so we're hoping to spur growth in industry but also spur growth in housing to address some of our housing needs, City Manager Clint Langreck said. Langreck said the city could choose to make one district or two smaller ones. Once the parcels are identified, the district will need approval from the Common Council, Joint Review Board, and the State Department of Revenue. Creating the district would allow the city to collect all property taxes on the increased property value from development on selected parcels for the to-be-determined life of the district instead of splitting the funds with the county, local school district, and area colleges. Those funds then would be used for efforts to incentivize development in the district to make the land more desirable to potential developers, such as building new roads to currently empty lots. Those other jurisdictions aren't really losing out on taxes because the assumption is that those taxes would not have been generated if it were not for the incentives funded through the district, explained Administration Director Nicola Maurer. The city has three other tax increment districts located downtown or on the east side of town. The new district or districts would likely pull some underutilized parcels out of those districts to further fund investment. The goal of Tax Increment District is that the increased property taxes collected from the development cover all of the investment into the district by the end of its life, at which point the taxes are once again split between all taxing entities. If that does not occur, the district closes in the red, meaning the city spent more on the district than it got back. When asked by the council members how the city planned to maintain the district's visibility, or viability rather, Maurer said the city would have to carefully consider its incentive options to make sure the city saw a return on its investment. She said stipulations also can be put in development agreements so developers pay a portion of the cost for infrastructure improvements. I would say these districts are a win, she said, but I would not want to put the city in a position of being on the hook, if you will, for any uncovered costs, so things would have to be done in such a way that the city is protected and the district is successful. And here's a Throwback Thursday article, and it looks like it is from 1998. Southwest Wisconsin students helped celebrate Susquecentennial in 1998. Yeah, that is an old-looking photo there. Youngsters gathered at First Capital State Historical Site near Belmont to mark the occasion 25 years ago. The story by Eric Hogstrom. A quarter century ago, hundreds of local students celebrated the day Wisconsin became the 30th star on the American flag. Southwest Wisconsin students gathered at the First Capital State Historical Site near Belmont in May of 1998 to help celebrate the 150th anniversary of the day Wisconsin was admitted to the Union as the 30th state. Here is how the Telegraph Herald reported on the event in its May 30th, 1998 edition. It says, students share 30-star salute in Belmont, Dateline Belmont, Wisconsin, where Chrissy Huffaker, at age 10, didn't know until Friday morning that her T-shirt design had won the Susquecentennial contest at the Iowa Grant Elementary School. Her 70 classmates wore the T-shirts during a special Wisconsin Statehood Day celebration at First Capital State Historical Site near Belmont. The design included a green map of the state on a blue cake with 15 colored candles on it. I thought it would look nice, she said. Iowa Grant youngsters joined students from Platteville and Belmont for a morning of old-fashioned games, demonstrations, birthday cake, and bell ringing. May 29th was the 150th anniversary of the day Wisconsin was admitted to the Union as the 30th state. Most of the 250 students visiting the Belmont site were fourth graders who have finished a year of studying Wisconsin history, including Belmont youngsters who had already recessed for the summer, but 37 sixth graders from the Platteville Middle School pedaled their bikes 6.5 miles to the site. Teacher Carla Flesch said the class routinely rides bicycles out to the Belmont Mound for a spring picnic, and this year decided to tie it in with the festivities. The trek took them about an hour plus a 20-minute break from the at the M Mound, where a few of the hardy souls hiked up to the top, she said. Alan Schroeder, director of the Belmont and Mineral Point Historic Sites, kicked off the morning's festivities by raising three flags. One was a 30-star U.S. flag. When Wisconsin became a state, it became the 30th star in the flag, he told the children. The last time this flag flew over this capital was January 14th, when state legislature was in session. That session was the beginning of the year-long celebration. Schroeder hoisted the blue state flag, noting the lead miner character in the design. Lead mining, I said that all wrong, everyone. Lead lead. The lead mining is an important part of our history, and it's still part of the flag, he said. Then after a few false starts, he raised the green on yellow Susquecentennial flag, and youngsters pledged allegiance to country and state. Organizers had set up six stations for youngsters. Stephanie Sager-Barrett, curator of the Platteville Mining Museum, and Mary Huck, museum education coordinator, taught groups how to play Graces. It was played by both boys and girls, Huck explained. You cross these sticks and pull them through the hoop. It goes flying and your partner catches it with another set of sticks, in theory. State archaeologist Diane Holliday and John Broyhan showed another group of youngsters the remnants of the old foundation excavated on the site. Before the school buses arrived, Broyhan bailed buckets of rainwater off the tarp that cover the site. This year, we hope to use ground-penetrating radar to find more foundations, Broyhan explained. No, he said in answer to a question, we haven't found any dead people yet. All right. Interesting stuff there. And that's originally a story from 1998. May of 1998. It's hard to believe 25 years ago, a quarter of a century ago since 1998. Good golly, how times have changed. Most notably in the past 10 years. Actually, past 15 years. Goodness gracious. In the almanac section, today is Thursday, May 25th, as we're on page 3A of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And since we actually are a little over here, we will go ahead and take care of our obituaries and then bring you the almanac section, as we're the halfway point here of the reading. And in today's obituaries, starting on page 12A, we have a good number here. Starting off with Shannon M. Graper. Shannon Marie Graper, age 45, of Dubuque, went to the Embrace of Jesus on Monday, May 22nd, 2023, at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center with family surrounding her. Visitation will be Friday, May 26th, from 9:30 to 11:15 a.m., with a celebration of Shannon's life at 11:30 a.m. at the Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. Shannon was born November 16, 1977, in Iowa City, Iowa, the daughter of Ronal and Ruth Graper. Despite her disability and numerous health issues, Shannon lived a life of adventure in numerous states and in England. Due to the onset of what would become a lifelong battle with mental illness, Shannon moved from England to Dubuque, Iowa, to live with her aunt and uncle, Lynn and Ken Helmke, who were able to facilitate increased support services for her. They were a tremendous support throughout her life. Shannon graduated from Hempstead High School in 1997 and soon after moved into an apartment with agency assistants. She loved boot scooting, dancing, animals, crafting, praise music, and making cards to express love to others. She treasured family and was most happy when having family time. Hills and Dales staff and friends became Shannon's second family. Shannon's faith in Jesus was paramount in her life and was reflected in her love for others, as well as daily spending time reading her Bible and journaling. She loved her church family at Hope Church, and part of her legacy is Hope Church's special needs ministry, known as Shine, that was started because of Shannon's persistence. Shannon will be remembered by her beautiful smile, frequent hugs, Kings on the Corner card games, and frequent response to compliments with, "I am, aren't I?" or "I do, don't I?" often while wearing pink or purple. Survivors include her father, Ronald Graper of Maquoketa, mother, Ruth Graper of Dubuque, grandmother, Ann Philippi of Dubuque, brother, Corey, married to Jolene Graper of Rapid City, South Dakota, sisters, Jill, married to Gustavo Hernandez of Lubbock, Texas, Jessica, married to Sean Hilborn of Dubuque, Elizabeth, married to Carl McCoy of Rochester, Illinois, nieces and nephews, Jasmine, Jordan, Madison, Alethea, Sophia, Ethan, Emma, Ella, and several beloved aunts, uncles, and cousins. Shannon was preceded in death by her paternal grandparents and maternal grandfather. In lieu of flowers, a memorial has been established to Hills and Dales. A special thank you to Hills and Dales staff, Dr. Michael Porosky, and Mercy One Psychiatry Department and Hospice of Dubuque. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Shannon's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Next up, we have George H. Harbaugh of Gutenberg, Iowa. George H. Harbaugh, age 74 of Gutenberg, died on Monday, May 22nd. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Monday, May 29th at the Morris Funeral Home in Gutenberg. Services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, May 30th at St. John's Lutheran Church in Gutenberg. Burial will be in the Gutenberg City Cemetery. Jane E. Hahn of Dyersville, Iowa. Jane E. Hahn, age 82 of Dyersville, passed away on Tuesday, May 23rd at the Finley Hospital in Dubuque. Visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. on Friday, May 26th at the Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue at the funeral home from 8:30 to 9:30 prior to funeral mass. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, May 27th at the St. Francis Xavier Basilica with burial in the church cemetery. Jane was born on January 2nd, 1941 in Delhi, Iowa. the daughter of Albert and Marcella, maiden name Leyendecker, Durga. She married Herbert Hahn on July 14, 1962, in St. Paul Catholic Church in Worthington, Iowa. Jane and Herb farmed near Dyersville while raising eight children. Jane was an independent woman and continued farming after the loss of her husband Herb in 1983. She later worked many years at Hardee's and McDonald's in Dyersville. She enjoyed fishing, playing cards, and her trips to the casino. She looked forward to her trips to the Chicago Cubs games. Survivors include her children. Glenn married to Karen Hahn of Dyersville. Joyce married to Charles Harris of Marion. Joan married to Dwayne Grave of Marion. Jill married to Virgil Recker of Manchester. Judy married to Ronald Simon of Burlington. Gary Hahn of Dyersville. Jennifer Hahn of Marion. Jessica married to Scott Brise of Havelock, North Carolina. Grandchildren Sarah Hahn, Molly Hahn, Victoria Harris, Caleb Harris, Christina married to Mitch Losel, Jacob married to Gladys Grave, Alexi Grave, Amanda Recker, Tiffany married to Tyler Smith, Emily Recker, Anthony married to Rachel Simon, Dominique Grill, Erica Kennedy, Adam Kennedy, Nicholas Simon, Cassandra Brise, Shane Brise, Kyle Brise, Isabel Brise, several great-grandchildren, siblings, Elvira Weber of Manchester, Bernice Lansing, Grace Newsel, both of Dyersville, in-laws Kathy Durga, Carol Durga, Dorothy Gorman, Molly married to Ken Angersola, and Alice Hahn. She was preceded in death by her husband Herbert in 1983, parents and parents-in-law Casper and Amelia Hahn, grandson Jack Brise, siblings Mary, married to Robert Morris, John Durga, Albert Durga, in-laws Ralph Weber, Art Lansing, Dick Newsel, Irma Puckett, James Hahn, Estella Michaels, and Dolores Hahn. The family would like to thank the staff at Finley Hospital in Dubuque and nurses of Helping Hands for their compassionate care. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family, and information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Memorials may be sent to the family in care of Kramer Funeral Home at 750 12th Avenue Southwest in Dyersville, Iowa 52040. Next up, Elaine C. Till, age 74, of Dubuque, died on Tuesday, May 23, 2023. Private services will be held at the Hockman Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Bellevue. They are assisting the family. From there, we go to Caleb M. Juergens of Hopkinton, Iowa. Caleb M. Juergens of Hopkinton, Iowa, passed away on Sunday, May 21st, 2023, from injuries sustained in an MVA near Hopkinton, Iowa. Visitation for Caleb will be held from 2 to 8 p.m. on Friday, May 26th, at the Rife Funeral Home in Dyersville, where a Scripture Wake service will be held at 2 p.m. Visitation will also be held after 9 a.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. A Mass of Christian Burial for Caleb will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, May 27th, at St. Luke's Catholic Church in Hopkinton, Iowa, with Reverend Paul Baldwin officiating. Burial will be held in Hopkinton Cemetery in Hopkinton, Iowa. Caleb was born October 22, 2007 in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, son of Eric and Laura Juergens. He was a freshman at Monticello High School, where he played football and also participated in FFA. His true passion in life was farming, both during the day and playing farming simulator at night with his friends. He also enjoyed four-wheeling with snowmobiling on guide trips with family and friends. He was a member of St. Luke's Parish in Hopkinton, Iowa. He is survived by his parents, Eric and Laura Juergens of Hopkinton, Iowa, his sister Avery, his grandparents Jerry and Susan Nefzer of Delhi, Iowa, Kathy Juergens of Delhi, Iowa, and Rod Juergens of Hopkinton, Iowa, his great-grandparents Ruth Ann Juergens of Worthington, Iowa, and Carl and Betty Sternhagen of Hopkinton, Iowa, aunts and uncles Abby and Dustin Smith of Dyersville, Iowa, Michael and Laura Nefzer of Council Bluffs, Lisa and Jim Torson of Lyle, Illinois, Lynn Nefsker of Waterloo, and Leanne and Garrett McLean of Waterloo. He is preceded in death by his great-grandparents, William and Alice Bokenstedt, Elmer and Catherine Nefsker, and Richard Juergens. An online video tribute may be viewed and online condolences sent to the family at www.reifffuneralhomeinc@gmail.com. That'd be Rife Funeral Home, Inc. at gmail.com. In lieu of flowers and gifts, the family prefers memorials be sent to the Caleb M. Juergens Memorial Fund at Rye Funeral Home, P.O. Box 271, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040, or to F&M Bank at 101 East Main Street in Manchester, 52057. Next, we go to Carol A. Frederick of Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Carol Ann Frederick, age 73, of Hazel Green, passed away on Wednesday, December 14th, 2022, at Luther Manor in Dubuque. Per Carol's wishes, there will be no special services. A celebration of life will be held on Saturday, June 3rd, 2023, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Banfield's Swiss House in Cuba City, Wisconsin. The Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City, Wisconsin is serving the family. Our final obit is Wendy J. Henman, age 64, who passed away on May 20th. Visitation will be 3 to 6 p.m. on Friday, May 26th, with service to follow at 6 p.m. at the Leonard Funeral Home at 2595 Rockdale Road in Dubuque. A private interment will be held at a later date in Dubuque Memorial Gardens. Wendy was born December 26, 1958, to Frank and Shirley Novak Krause in Ames, Iowa. She married David Henman on July 18, 1988. Wendy is survived by her husband, David Henman, three daughters, Ashley, married to Judd Bill Meyer of Farley, Iowa, Courtney, married to A.J. Lieb of Dubuque, Iowa, Holly Henman of Dubuque, Iowa, and three grandchildren, Cole, Cameron, and Freya. She is survived by three brothers, Michael, married to Eleanor Krause of DeKalb, Illinois, Corbin, married to Sherry Krause of Florida, David, married to Julie Krause of LaClaire, Iowa, and two sisters, Robin Krause and Lee, married to Wayne Gerda, her last name is Krause, of Dubuque. She was preceded in death by her parents, Frank and Shirley Krause. Special thanks to Kevin and Paul Price Brenner of the Kennel Club and Arts Communities, as they were very meaningful to her life. They're being taken care of by the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory. All right, some funeral services for today, this Thursday, actually listing here through the next several days. William Brooks of Stockton, Illinois, visitation 9:30 to 10 a.m. Friday tomorrow at the Holy Cross Catholic Church in Stockton. Service 10 a.m. Friday at the church. Next up, Orrin K. Dimmick of Platteville, Wisconsin, visitation 5 to 7 p.m. today and from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, May 26th at the Melby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville. The service is at 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home. From there, we go to James J. Dooland of Mason City, Iowa. Celebration of life, 1 to 5 p.m. Saturday, June 10th at Happy's Place. Next is Donna Flynn. Her service is in Dubuque, 3 to 7 p.m. Friday on June 2nd at the Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory at 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. And from 9 to 10:15 a.m. on Saturday, June 3rd at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, a massive Christian burial will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, June 3rd at the church. From there, we go to Nicole F. Hall of Stratford, New Jersey. Service is at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, May 27th at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church. Celebration of life is 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday at Eagles Club at 1175 Century Drive. I hope I have that right, Stratford, New Jersey. Elaine Hoffman of Guttenberg, Iowa, 4 to 7 p.m. today at the Morris Funeral Home in Guttenberg from 9 to 9:45 a.m. Friday, May 26th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Guttenberg. Mass of Christian burial is 10 a.m. Friday at the church. Next is Karen A. Lyson of Dubuque. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. today, so that was held already, at the Church of the Nativity. Walter W. McLaughlin of Dubuque. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today at the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory at 2595 Rockdale Road. Service is at 11 a.m. Friday, May 26th. That's tomorrow at the funeral home. From there we go to Jerome W. Reuter of Potosi, Wisconsin. Visitation is 8:30 to 11 a.m. Saturday, May 27th at St. Thomas Catholic Church of Potosi. Mass of Christian burial at 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Next is Sherry A. Stengel of Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Visitation 3 to 7 p.m. today at the Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City. And from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, May 27th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Sinsinawa. Service is 10:30 a.m. Friday at the church. Helen R. Steele of Dubuque. Visitation 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, May 26th at St. Columbkill Catholic Church. Mass of Christian burial is at 11 a.m. Friday at the church. And finally, Patricia Ann Taylor on this list of Dubuque, sharing of memories, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, May 26th at the Mary Frances Clark Chapel, Mount Carmel Bluffs. Service is 10:30 a.m. Friday at the chapel. And those are our nuns that read for us the Dubuque Telegraph Herald here on some Mondays of the month, the 2nd, 4th, and if there is a 5th Monday, our sisters at Mount Carmel read the Dubuque Telegraph Herald and bring it to you. So I'm thinking you possibly could have heard Patty for some of those broadcasts. We weren't really sure about that. We definitely want to remember our nuns who read for us here, and they do such a nice job. And that's sad to lose one. It really is. But you can be assured she's with the Lord now. And we will move on here to some birth announcements and also the Dean's List at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Sunday, May 21st, 2023, Weideman, Dan and Christina Weideman of Dubuque, a boy at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital in Dubuque. Monday, May 22nd, 2023, Sherman, Brett and Christina Sherman of Dubuque, a boy at Finley. Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023, Nadorft, Justin and Cheyenne Nadorft of Belmont, Wisconsin, a boy at Southwest Health of Platteville. Schweitzer Fetterman, Shane Schweitzer and Tia Fetterman of Mineral Point, Wisconsin, a boy at Southwest Health. Rahi, last name spelled R-A-H-E. Tyler and Mackenzie Rahi of Dyersville, Iowa, a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Klosterman, Zach and Sarah Klosterman of Piasta, Iowa, a girl at Mercy One. From there, we move on to the Dean's List at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater for spring 2023 in Stockton, Illinois. Simon Riley, or really last name, R-I-L-L-I-E. In Cibola, Iowa, Lydia Coatney. In the Wisconsin list now, Benton, Wisconsin, Jackson Klang. Boscobel, Wisconsin, Maggie Dremsa and Colton Wallen. Cassville, Jennifer Tuscher. Cuba City, Samantha Meyer. Hazel Green, Alexa Hossey. Lancaster, Matthew Huey, Maya Plosey, and Caden Straka. Mineral Point, Dominic McVeigh and Lexi Weir. Montfort, Luke Philback and Michael Winders. Muscoda, Carly Hatch. Platteville, Sammy Kelly and Miles Steckling. Potosi, Paige Seigert and Shay Seigert. Prairie du Chien, Allison Kennedy. Scholesburg, Joelle Sigworth. And now we bring you news about Tina Turner, who died on Tuesday. And it shows in the photo here her performing during a concert at the O2 Arena in London in 2009. She was known as the Queen of Rock and Roll. This is an Associated Press story, Dateline New York, where Tina Turner, the unstoppable singer and stage performer who teamed with husband Ike Turner for a dynamic run of hit records and live shows in the 1960s and 70s and survived her horrifying marriage to triumph in middle age with a chart-topping What's Love Got to Do with It, has died at age 83. Turner died Tuesday after a long illness in her home in Kusnacht near Zurich, according to her manager. She became a Swiss citizen a decade ago. Few stars traveled so far. She was born Anna May Bullock in a segregated Tennessee hospital and spent her latter years on a 260,000-square-foot estate on Lake Zurich, or Zurich, and overcame so much. Physically battered, emotionally devastated, and financially ruined by her 20-year relationship with Ike Turner, she became a superstar on her own in her 40s at a time when most of her peers were on their way down and remained a top concert draw for years to come. How do we say farewell to a woman who owned her pain and trauma and used it as a means to help change the world? Angela Bassett, who played Turner in the 1993 biopic What's Love Got to Do with It, said in a statement. With admirers ranging from Mick Jagger to Beyoncé to Mariah Carey, the Queen of Rock and Roll was one of the world's most popular entertainers, known for a core of pop, rock, and rhythm, and blues favorites Proud Mary, Nutbush City Limits, River Deep, Mountain High, and hits she had in the 80s. Among them, What's Love Got to Do with It, and We Don't Need Another Hero, and a cover of Al Green's Let's Stay Together. Her trademarks included a growling contralto that might smolder or explode, her bold smile and strong cheekbones, her palette of wigs and muscular, quick-stepping legs did not shy from showing off. She sold more than 150 million records worldwide, won 12 Grammys, was voted along with Ike into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1991 and on her own in 2021, and was honored at the Kennedy Center in 2005, with Beyoncé and Oprah Winfrey among those praising her. Her life became the basis for a film, a Broadway musical, and an HBO documentary in 2021 that she called her public farewell. All right, as promised, before we bring you back to what we were talking about earlier, which was the Almanac. Thursday, May 25th is the 145th day of 2023. There are 220 days left in this year. On this date in 1787, the Constitutional Convention began at the Pennsylvania State House, known as Independence Hall in Philadelphia, after enough delegates had shown up for a quorum. I should say it is now called Independence Hall. It used to be the Pennsylvania State House. In 1946, Transjordan, now Jordan, became a kingdom as it proclaimed its new monarch, Abdullah I. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy told Congress, "I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth." In 1964, the U.S. Supreme Court in Griffin v. County School Board of Prince Edward County ordered the Virginia County to reopen its public schools, which officials had closed in an attempt to circumvent the Supreme Court's 1954 Brown v. Board of Education of Topeka desegregation ruling. In 1968, the Gateway Arch in St. Louis was dedicated by Vice President Hubert Humphrey and Interior Secretary Stuart Udall. In 1977, the first Star Wars film, later retitled Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, was released by 20th Century Fox. In 1979, 273 people died when an American Airlines DC-10 crashed just after takeoff from Chicago's O'Hare Airport. In 2008, NASA's Phoenix Mars lander arrived on the Red Planet to begin searching for evidence of water. The spacecraft confirmed the presence of water ice at its landing site. Today's birthdays include country singer Jesse Coulter, formerly Mrs. Waylon Jennings, is age 80. Actor-singer Leslie Uggams is 80. Movie director and Muppeteer Frank Oz is 79. Karen Valentine is 76. Actor Jackie Weaver, is it actress? Jackie Weaver, 76. Patty D. Arbonville is 72. Playwright Eve Ensler is 70. Connie Selica is 68. Paul Weller is 65. Amy Klobuchar, senator from Minnesota, is 63 today. Actor comedian Mike Myers is 60. Actor Joseph Reitman is 55. Actress Lindsay and Sydney Greenbush of the TV show Little House on the Prairie, they're 53. Jamie Kennedy is 53. Octavia Spencer is 53. Aaron Hayes is 47. Ethan Suplee is 47. Todd Whitener is 45. Corbin Allred is 44. Lauren Frost is 38. Ebony Noel is 33. Guy Lawrence of Disclosure is 32, and Olympic gold medal gymnast Allie Raceman is age 29 on this Thursday. As we're going to take a quick check of the opinion section and put a bow on this thing for this reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. For what is today? It's Thursday, May 25th. Here is a local opinion in the other views section. Let's talk about health, our physical and our brain health. It's written by May Hingtin of the Mental Health and Disability Services. It says, when you have your health, you have everything. When you do not have your health, nothing else matters at all. That's a quote from Augustine Burroughs, American writer and author. That quote surely hits home with many of us. Often when someone talks about his or her health, they're referring to physical health. Maybe it's a short-term illness like the flu or recovering from a minor procedure. Maybe it's the big stuff like a major surgery or a chronic illness. When we don't feel well, the rest of our daily lives can seem insignificant. It's not just a physical health issue that can consume our thinking. It's our brain health issues, too. When we have anxiety, depression, or other brain health concerns, not much else may matter on a daily basis. Mental Health Awareness Month is this month, and it has been happening every May for the last 74 years. Let's continue to talk about our health, not just in May, but every month, every day. While many of us are okay talking about our physical health issues, there is a hesitance when talking about our brain and mental health issues. This hesitance or discomfort is due to the stigma related to brain health. A stigma is a label placed on people to set them apart and to make them feel ashamed or embarrassed. Stigma like this keep us from talking about and seeking care for our brain health concerns. Well, what can we do together to reduce and eliminate this stigma? We can change our own language. We can start sharing our health stories, both physical health and brain health. We can seek help when we need it and encourage others to do the same without shame. Through our words and our actions, we can make it totally okay, totally normal to talk about our brain health. Because when we have our health, we have everything. That written by May Hingtin of Dubuque, who is the CEO of a 9-county region called the Mental Health / Disability Services of the East Central Region, which funds a wide variety of services for comprehensive brain health and disability services to individuals in eastern Iowa. And that is all the time we have for today. This Thursday, May 25th, reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. Expect a high of 70 degrees today in northeast Iowa, a low of 42 tonight, mostly sunny conditions throughout today. You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. This is the Dubuque Telegraph Herald reading from Thursday, May 25th. I'm Andrew Haupt, your reader, filling in, saying thank you so much for listening. Don't forget our website, iowaradioreading.org. And to tell you that our contact phone number is 515-243-6833 or toll-free 1-877-404-4747. Thank you so much for listening today. Have a nice weekend, everyone, and straight ahead.